I'm John Batchelor with my friend and colleague, Gordon Chang, my co-host. And we are very pleased to welcome retired Air Force General Blaine Holt, served as Deputy Military Representative on NATO, to ask what to make of the recent incident off the coast of Alaska when two bombers capable of carrying nuclear weapons from Russia and two bombers, same from China, flew up to the alert point so that NORAD responded with fighter aircraft from Canada and from the U.S. The reporting says F-18s, F-16s, and F-35s. Blaine, a very good day to you. Thank you. How to regard that incident? One way it was described to me was the circus came to town and they put their elephants up front. What did you make of it? Good day to you.
It's great to be with you both. I think that that's a very good characterization. There's a very interesting message that got sent with that. It's very pro forma for them to come check our defenses and to check our response times and then what types of intercept aircraft we might send up after them. They expect all those things. It's pro forma. But what's interesting about this one is the Russians and the Chinese sent a message with their antique bombers to say, look at us, we're flying together, we train together, we're building this relationship, and they're trying to give us the image of an alliance that's forming. And honestly, if they could have had antique bombers with Iranian crews and North Korean crews, they'd have thrown them up there too. But this was about message sending. This is not the way that either nation would want to go to war with us. It's not what they would do.
Gordon, you have a question.
So, Blaine, when we look at the Chinese and the Russian relationship, we see naval exercises together. We see, of course, the incursion near Alaska. I guess what we're seeing then is that if there's going to be a war in Asia, we can't count on it just being one of those two countries. I suppose we're going to have to assume that it's going to be both of them with their friend North Korea. So really what happened is the region is divided and we face a coalition.
That's exactly right. And two of the three nations really do have a global reach. That's what makes it very alarming. When you look at the Russian and Chinese cooperation militarily, I'm not implying that they're dear friends. They're not. But when you look at how they're becoming more interoperable in their militaries, it gives them many more options. Whether there's an outbreak of war in Asia, you could easily see them loading up the Japanese Navy, loading up our Navy with more assets. My concern is what they can do outside of the region. When you start to look at how they've been exercising together in the Cape of Good Hope down in South Africa with practicing naval blockades, and then what's available to them with their friends or in Iran with blocking the Straits of Hormuz or blocking the Malaccan Straits. And right now we see Chinese ships steaming right to the Malaccan Straits as the world tensions start to rise or rise more than they have.
Blaine, we're told that the Chinese are spending a great deal of money on their nuclear missile force, building a lot of silos in the northwest of the country. Now and again, the Kremlin, through its spokesperson, Vladimir Putin, rattles out talk about tactical nuclear weapons, and then they have a missile called Satan II, which we presume is a strategic weapon. They also brag about their hypersonics and their cruise missiles, all of that. How do you regard this? Are we unprepared for this kind of drumbeat? Are we responding adequately to what appears to be a strategic threat to the existence of the U.S.?
I'm very concerned about this one. I think you're getting to a very key matter in global stability right now, John. And what that is we've always, in the nuclear age, pinned doctrine on MAD or mutually assured destruction. But that relies on a balance in weaponry around the world, and we have lagged. And so while you see the Russians, who arguably at the very lowest conventional levels don't do very well. You can look at Ukraine. They have not achieved incredible things in 2.5 years of war, besides a lot of killing. But if you go to the very highest ends, the Russians are sitting on technology that, quite frankly, we're behind on. Our hypersonics programs are behind. The Sarmat-2 missile, the Poseidon missile that has a lot of amazing capabilities from a seaborne perspective. And then the possibility that they might be exporting that type of technology to China, or exporting actual weapons to China as they deepen their military relationship, it changes the balance so that we're not in as much of a deterrent space with them as we used to be. You know, we've got the triad: bombers from the air, you've got the submarines, and then you've got missile silos here. But it seems that we're waiting much more of our hopes on our submarine force with this deficit of technology.
Gordon, you have a question.
General, as we speak, stock markets around the world are selling off. And the question is, does that accelerate or does that impede the possibility of war? Because you hear all these people in the Pentagon saying, oh, you know, it's no earlier than 2027. Maybe it's in the 2030s. General Mike Minahan, in a memo leak last year, said maybe 2025. What is your sense about these cataclysmic events in markets? How do they affect everyone's calculation about war?
You know, these are great questions, because economic security is national security, and yet we don't find it as a priority in the national security strategy of the United States. I wish that we could extend, as a nation, vote to extend General Minahan and not allow him to retire next month. But it does appear that he is going to go into retirement. Full disclosure, he's a friend of mine, but he's the most clear-eyed about the earliest that we could start to see war. And you both cover World War II history so beautifully, so I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying to jump into the pit with you. But I will remind our listeners that economic calamity creates scarcity, and that's what the Great Depression was. And scarcity is what creates a rush for resources, and the rush for resources is where the friction for warfare comes up. We see those types of things, and have seen those types of things happening here. China has been on a steady decline and an financial implosion that looks like it's about to spark a commercial real estate crisis that will be felt in every single corner of the globe. We're here seeing a market meltdown. We don't know if that's going to lead to something more systemic and sustained. But what you're essentially looking at from an economic perspective is the kerosene that you would dump on a fire called the Middle East that could spread in all directions of the globe and take us to the same place we got to in 1939.
General, we have less than a minute. The B-21, the Columbia-class bomber, and the Sentinel, all those are ambitions. If we have all three of them now, are we successfully deterring the enemy? We have 30 seconds.
If they work and they're on budget the way that they're supposed to, two of the three are not doing very well, John. The B-21 is doing extremely well in terms of its procurement performance, but we're not getting these things fast enough. And yet, on a day where the markets are failing, we see Lockheed Martin stock just careening through the stratosphere. And so that's where we find ourselves today. We need procurement reform.
General Blaine Holt, retired U.S. Air Force. Gordon Chang, I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.